Mr. Robertson, if you could introduce item 12.
Yes. Okay, so item 12 is the 2017 triennial review of the water quality control plan for the Central Coast Basin, accompanied by resolution number R3-2017-0119. Central Coast Water Board staff have conducted a triennial review of the region's basin plan, as we are required to review the basin plan periodically by state and federal laws. The triennial review results in a resolution approving a priority list of issues. The priority list of issues identifies aspects of the basin plan that can be improved or corrected to strengthen the Central Coast Water Board's ability to protect water quality and beneficial uses via permits, for example. Staff recommends approval of the resolution, which will provide direction to staff on evaluating the priority list of issues to determine if they should be addressed by future basin plan amendments. Steve Size of our staff will present a summary of the 2017 triennial review process and the list itself.
As we move to the presentation, as a reminder, I'm closing the speaker cards for this particular item, so this is last call. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, Chair Wolf and board members. My name is Steve Size. I'm an environmental scientist in the Basin Planning and 401 unit. And I'm going to give you a brief overview of the 2017 triennial review process. I wanted to get some definitions out of the way. When we talk about our triennial review, we're talking about a review of the water quality control plan for the Central Coastal Basin that occurs at least once every 3 years. And we've completed that triennial review for 2017. The previous triennial review was in 2014, and I'll talk about that later. I also wanted to make sure everybody understands what I mean by when my shortcut is the basin plan, but that's the full terminology is the water quality control plan for the Central Coastal Basin, one of 9 basin plans in California. Our basin plan for the Central Coastal Basin was established in 1975 by this board. And that it's been 42 years since that original plan was adopted, and we've had approximately 70 basin plan amendments associated with the basin plan. And if you look at the first chapter, the first paragraph of the first chapter of the basin plan, it alludes to the objective of the basin plan, which is to show how waters in the region should be managed to provide the highest water quality reasonably possible. And the basin plan is a regulatory document, and it forms the basis for most of the regulatory programs within our office to protect water quality. Now, why are we reviewing the basin plan? The primary outcome of a triennial review is to identify basin plan language that can be improved or corrected to improve the Water Board's ability to protect water quality. Now, this may lead to improved beneficial use designations, water quality objectives, or implementation strategies, or monitoring programs as well. I didn't include that in there. Additionally, the basin plan we're required to review the basin plan under the Federal Clean Water Act, Section 303C, which says that requires states to hold public hearings for review of water quality standards at least once every 3 years. In addition, the California Water Code 13240 requires basin plans to be periodically reviewed. In attachment one of your package, there's the complete triennial review report, which is a 60-page document. I have a section in there on the achievements that we have accomplished since the previous triennial review, which was in 2014. And in 2014, we had 9 priority issues that were associated with the triennial review, and we've made some significant progress since then. 3 of the 9 issues were completed, resulting in basin plan amendments, which were passed under resolution 2016-0030, and it included this bullet list, which is we added our vision of healthy watersheds language to Chapter 1 of the Basin Plan. We revised beneficial uses in Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan for 10 distinct water bodies. And we also made extensive, comprehensive editorial amendments that covered the entire Basin Plan. We also made partial progress on 2 of the issues from the triennial review of 2014. And that was on the integrated water resource protection issue, which was ranked number 1 in 2014 as the highest priority issue. And we also have updated the turbidity water quality objective units under resolution 2017-0014, and that's going before the State Water Board for approval within the next few months. I wanted to give a summary of the entire process, and you can see that today's meeting is in the green line there. And so we have a series of steps that, and I'll go through in more detail in the subsequent slides, but there is a process, and most of the regions use a similar process to this. Upon approval by the Water Board, the final result is a recommended priority list of issues that we will work on as potential future basin plan amendments. And after the resolution is approved, we will send that the entire triennial review administrative record to the State Water Board and US EPA, and that completes the process. So a few more details on this process. The first step we did in this process was to develop a preliminary list of basin plan amendment issues. First thing we did was look at the issues that were previously in the triennial review that still needed to be addressed. We also solicited suggestions from staff internally, and we received a lot of good comments from staff about how the basin plan needs to be improved. We compiled all those issues into a brief issues descriptions document, and we released that out to the public in August, and that contained 47 issues. And we're, as usual, usually when we send out these documents for the triennial review, we're soliciting comments, and we always are we say that the brief issue descriptions is a way to get ideas rolling, and we're accepting comments on any and all aspects of the basin plan, not just limited to the 47 identified issues. We had a 50-day public comment period in which we announced on the Region 3 public notices webpage, and also there's a dedicated triennial review webpage. We posted those announcements and the draft brief issues descriptions document. We also sent out the public notice to about 350 persons on the triennial review interested parties email list. We held a public workshop on September 19th, and in the end we received 5 public comment letters, which totaled about 20 pages. And you can see that we got letters from the City of Lompoc, Grower Shipper Association, Copper Development Association, and we actually received 2 letters from an independent consultant, Fred Krieger. We summarized all those comments and our responses to those comments in the triennial review report, which is attached to your package. Most of the comments were related to beneficial uses or designation of beneficial uses and water quality objectives. We did receive some detailed suggested changes to Chapter 4 of the Basin Plan, which is the implementation chapter, from the city of Lompoc. Usually, for our triennial reviews, we have a set of criteria that we use to evaluate these, because the end result is a prioritized list. So we wanted to have some objectivity in ranking these issues. So we actually assigned a numeric score for each of these criteria that you see up here. And so I'll just go through each of these real briefly. Vision alignment. We asked the question, does the issue align with the Central Coast's vision and the measurable goals associated with that vision, and also the Water Board's priorities? Water quality standards improvement. We asked the question, will the issue improve water quality standards, beneficial uses, or water quality objectives or prohibitions? Effectiveness. Will the issue advance water quality protection by improving regulatory or program efficiency, or our legal authority to regulate activities that negatively impact water quality? And finally, public interest. Does the issue have a high perceived public interest? And this was based mostly on our comment letters that we received, but also staff's interaction with the public and also our knowledge of past triennial reviews. So we evaluated a total of 49 basin planning issues. And this is a little more than in the previous years. And because of such the large number of issues, potential issues, we actually realized that a lot of those were purely editorial in nature, like a new law will replace an old law, so we have to update the basin plan. And so we decided not to add those prioritized issues into the final list. So we did not prioritize 21 issues that were purely editorial in nature. These editorial issues may, however, be included in future basin plan amendments. Similarly, we did not prioritize 7 issues where the State Water Board is leading an effort to develop a similar project. And our reasoning was that we did not want to duplicate the statewide efforts on a regional scale. In the end, we had 21 issues that remained and were prioritized for the final list of issues to be pursued as future basin plan amendments. And those 21 issues are attached to the resolution. Our highest priority issue is issue 46, the watershed and integrated water resource protection issue. And this was also the highest priority issue in the previous 2014 triennial review. And the reason why is because the goal of that issue is to make the basin plan consistent with sustainable water management laws and policies that right now the basin plan is actually silent on, and that would include the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, the recycled water policy of the State Water Board, and the climate change policy of the State Water Board. And so we want to make it consistent, but additionally, we would like to add actual implementation language to Chapter 4 of the basin plan to reflect integrated water resource protection. So staff recommends approval of the triennial review resolution before you today. Adoption of the resolution will conclude the triennial review and approve a priority list of issues to be pursued as potential future basin plan amendments. And that's all I have. I have to answer questions.
All right, lights please, thank you. So open. We do have 3 speaker cards on this particular item, so I would suggest we hear these comments, and this will then allow all of us to, further clarify and augment the information as needed. So I'd like to start with Darlene Din, 3 minutes as requested.
Good afternoon, Darlene Din. First of all, I want to thank staff for reaching out and holding the amount of public outreach that was done, and that's very much appreciated. So my comments are more on a couple items that are unclear, and that has to do with the cattlemen that are grazers and with any kind of dry land farming. And how item potentially, we're not sure, it's a more of an inquiry, how the policy would deal on item 28 and 29 and if that would apply, and that has to do with prohibitions and disturbance. And if so, then would be to reach out to the cattlemen or the any kind of dry land farming in that policy development, because up until this point, we weren't sure that they would be affected. Not that they are, and that may not potentially be, but that in this case, and that it would be at least evaluated, and they would be included should there needs to be discussion on land disturbance. This board and staff have been very supportive of grazers and rangelands being maintained in grazing land in this region and its values. So just so that everybody is handling it in an appropriate manner and are doing what the regional board is seeing as their appropriate management, and that it is done in an environmental way and that they're included. And again, thanks staff for reaching out. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I have a question. I just want to clarify what issues you mentioned 28 and 29, and I'm
that has to do with the, let me hit this up so that I have my notes, the land disturbance and prohibition, and then the other item is established prohibitions on unpermitted discharges, and those would be as it relates to dry land farming and grazers.
Yes. Okay, and so it's on page 38 and 39 of attachment one.
And we will have staff respond to those questions that you have.
And we're not sure that it affects them. We're just
inquiring. You will hear feedback in the next 9 minutes.
Okay.
Next is Abby Taylor Silva.
Good afternoon. I'm Abby Taylor Silva with the Grower Shipper Association of Central California. First, I want to say thank you to Steve and staff. I really appreciate their responsiveness to our letter, especially as it relates to beneficial use designations. There are two areas that I still want to focus on in response to the proposed staff changes that you're seeing today. On issue number 5, my point was really that for the groundwater recharge beneficial use, that beneficial multi-benefit projects like the Salinas River Maintenance Program really benefit groundwater recharge. But I think in the way that the amendment's been made, that gets a little muddy. The language amendment sounds like in-stream flows, riparian and wetland habitat benefit that the recharge, whereas my point was really that the maintenance of those or what benefits. So I would suggest either taking out the amendment for now, and then we can further delve into that as you work on the basin plan amendment, or replacing it with more multi-benefit stream maintenance projects, which was really my point. So I wanted to leave you with that. Also on issue 23, this is in regard to the revised pesticide objective. I wanted to just further speak on the point that I'd made before. It was noted in here that the new language was more consistent with the Central Valleys Basin Plan, but I confirmed this morning the Central Valleys Basin Plan's non-detect provision is limited to only hydrocarbon pesticides, not all pesticides, as is being suggested here with this change. So hydrocarbon pesticides, such as DDT, are legacy materials, and they're not those currently being used, and therefore they're really in a very different category. And so this proposed change is significantly different than the Central Valley Basin Plan if we're now looking at all pesticides. Also, in regarding to the language, it says that discharges shall not result in pesticide concentrations in bottom sediments or aquatic life that adversely affect beneficial uses. It's important to remember that levels of detect are so much lower now than they were even 5 to 10 years ago, where we might have been looking at parts per million. Now we're looking at parts per trillion. So that does not automatically mean that they're negatively affecting a beneficial use just because they're being detected in nanograms or whatever it might be. So I worry about this language because it assumes that any detection is problematic. And I just worry that it's one, I'd want to make sure that we get the consistency with the Central Valley Basin Plan if we were going to. And also, I just don't know that it's necessary for the board to use their limited resources to include this objective if, in fact, it's also not consistent with the Central Valley Basin Plan, as you might be thinking. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And last speaker card for this item is Kay Mercer.
Hello, I'm Kay Mercer with KMI, and like Abby and Darlene, I'd like to thank Steve for his responsiveness. He's been there to answer all questions and has just been exemplary in how he's managed the process. Thank you, Steve. A couple of things that I want to comment on is item 6, which is the designate surface waters that recharge groundwater. I'm not exactly sure where containment basins fall into this. And as we move forward on mitigating and agricultural pollution or as we work on developing management practices for agriculture, my concern is that if containment basins are considered to be groundwater recharge and there's a policy written around them, that they could actually preclude the use of containment basins for mitigation. And so an example is even in the current irrigated lands regulatory program, containment basins are treated as if they are, that they automatically leach nitrate. But from what I've seen out in the field is that when they are dredged, you usually see several inches to several feet of glade material, which means that there's been denitrification. So it moves from being a source of leaching to actually a treatment. And so I'm very concerned that unless this is treated appropriately, it could potentially preclude the use of containment basins in systems of management practices. So I'd like to see the board maybe amend the language there to create a carve out. The same thing, there are a lot of different, Steve said that a lot of the priorities deal with beneficial use designations, and many of them kind of create blanket beneficial use designations. I would like to let the staff board know, in case they don't, that other regional boards are creating a kind of landscape level regulatory vehicles to address sort of landscape, sort of try to address where beneficial uses may be inappropriately designated. And an example I would have is one of my clients, Chular Creek, east of Old Stage Road. There is no way that reach of that creek will ever support aquatic life. And yet there is an aquatic life beneficial use. So in order to delist this and remove the beneficial use, we'd have to go through a use attainability assessment. And so one of the things that I'm concerned about is that these blanket beneficial use designations that you're working on through this triennial basin plan review process is going to create even more situations where there are inappropriate beneficial uses, thus triggering the regulated communities need to go through use attainability assessments. It's not only expensive to do the monitoring, but also there's a lot of unknowns about the EPA process for looking at use attainability analyses. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think at this time I would like to have staff respond and answer the questions. I have noticed you took ample notes, so you can address our three speakers' questions and concerns.
Okay, I'll address the comments of Darlene Din. In regards, well, actually, I have a sort of a general overview response. These issues are not basin plan amendments, so I just want to make that perfectly clear. These are, you could call these issues sort of concept papers for future basin plan amendments. So if we decide to pursue any of these issues, we will come back before the board with a complete package of proposed basin plan amendments, and it will go through the whole public vetting process. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. So in some of the issue descriptions, we say things like, well, the basin plan could be modified in such a manner and provide some mock language, but that's not to say that that's actually going to be the way it would happen in the end when we go through a basin plan amendment in the future. So Darlene had a comment about dryland farming, and she was concerned about some proposed basin plan amendments in item 28 and 29. And I think the basic response is that we would, if we were to develop this issue into a proposed basin plan amendment, we would look at those kind of situations, because we wouldn't want to make new regulation that is not vetted with the public, and also that is consistent with the Clean Water Act and Port of Cologne. Abby Taylor Silva had some comments on item 5 from the Trina Review report. Which was about groundwater recharge definitions. And again, we proposed some language in there where we're saying that we need to designate a lot of surface waters with this beneficial use of groundwater recharge. So when we do that, we're saying that these are significant surface waters that recharge groundwater. And I think it's in our best interest to do that whenever possible. We haven't really done a systematic review of all surface waters and looked at groundwater basins under those surface waters and find out the key groundwater recharge areas. So this issue is saying we should do that and designate those surface waters as groundwater recharge areas. And we had some language proposed that would actually revise our beneficial use definition that's currently in the basin plan for groundwater recharge by adding some language that talks about in-stream flows and riparian and wetland habitat. And the reason we think that's important is that this, a lot of times we're looking for this beneficial use to be protective of those types of aquatic habitats, as well as groundwater recharge. Abby also talked about the pesticide objective. Currently, the pesticide objective that we have in the basin plan is from the original language developed in 1975, and at that time there were a lot of chlorinated hydrocarbon pesticides And I think most of the time when we meant, when we said pesticide in the basin plan in 1975, we meant chlorinated hydrocarbon pesticides. So there's some language in there that talks about in non-detects. And our the issue description is to update the basin plan to not limit our discussion of pesticides to chlorinated hydrocarbon pesticides, but all pesticides in within the confines of our narrative objective for pesticides. And Kay Mercer had a comment on issue 6, which is related to designating surface waters that recharge groundwater. And again, this is a, well, her specific concern was related to mitigated or mitigation basins. And again, when we, if and when we are to develop this as a basin plan amendment that would come before the board, we would consider those kinds of effects or effects on on basins and other types of basins. So right now, that's a conceptual idea. So I really don't actually know how it would affect mitigation basins right now at this time. Okay, so that's all I have. I don't know if anybody else wanted to chime in.
I'll jump in. I just want to reiterate something that Steve said, is that these are issue topics. These are not basin plan amendments. There are no details associated with these. If the board approves this list, we will start working on the highest priority item. And then we'll develop that into a potential basin plan amendment. It's up to the board to adopt the amendment after we go through a long and comprehensive process. So there are no details associated with any of these topics to debate or make a decision on today.
Thank you for that clarification, Michael. So let's see, Mr. Johnson.
You know, before each board meeting, we have briefings with the board members by staff, broken up with just a couple of us in each briefing so we don't violate the open meeting laws, but so that we have a chance to familiarize ourselves past just reading the staff reports with the subjects we're going to be talking about. And it was kind of funny when we did this briefing, at least for me, my reaction to reading this was, okay, so we're doing our triennial review. We have 47 different items, of which 21 are non-editorial, so we've got 21 items proposed to work on in the next 3 years in the basin plan, and we've been spending about a half a personnel year per year on these, and our number one priority we estimate is going to take 3 personnel years. So I said in the briefing, well, are you guys telling me that there's 20 other items that we need to be working on that we're not even going to get to? And the response was, well, no, this isn't the list of everything that we need to be doing on the basin plan. This is a list of everything that anybody suggested that we consider doing on the basin plan, whether it was inside the staff or stakeholders or whatever. So it gave me a little perspective to realize that, quite frankly, most likely, maybe the top 3 items are going to get some work done on them in the next few years. Probably not just the top one, because some other stuff will come up tangentially, like as we work on TMDLs and such. But this is not a list of 21 items that you're going to see being crammed into the basin plan in the next 3 years, because we don't have the staff to do it. That's just number one. And number two, it's not a list of 21 items that you're going to see pushed into the basin plan the next 3 years because these are not even items that staff is all recommending should be done. These are just suggestions that were made, and staff is saying if we were going to do it, we could do this without even a recommendation as to whether it should be done or not. So having said that, you know, most of the questions that were raised were interesting and had some substance to them. I mean, Kay's talking about, you know, we're talking about groundwater recharge, we're talking about retention basins. We're running into all sorts of questions around that, you know, as people try to do groundwater recharge projects, questions that aren't even addressed here, like, is this a taking of surface water that involves a water right? You know, so, you know, yeah, they're great questions, but realistically, probably if we adopt staff recommendation, you know, we're going to be dealing with the top couple or three items on this list only, and we're going to be dealing with them in a fairly exhaustive development and public comment manner. So that's kind of my generic response to the to all the comments that were made, because as Mr. Thomas said, you know, we have nothing agendized as far as what any of this stuff would look like. The only question before us is, are these the appropriate you know, top priorities? And realistically, is this the appropriate one or two top priorities for us to be taking up in the basin plan? And I frankly don't have a problem with the top priority that was listed.
So,
I do have just a comment.
Okay.
Are you coming down us?
Why would
I don't
So, you know, my concern is simply just public input in this process. So because these are conceptual items, if staff then decides to work on any one of these through that development, you'll be reaching out to stakeholders, such as those that have spoken today, and getting their further input as you begin to develop that particular item. Is that correct? Okay.
Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, just one question. It struck me as interesting that the issue that rose to the top to be the number one priority recommended by staff was number 46, and that was a carryover issue, and that was somehow recommended by the public as far as public comment, right? So can staff sort of just walk us through how number 46 developed and how it became, why it became number one, and is it true that public was also recommending it as a new issue, even though it was a carryover issue?
Well, as Steve described in his presentation, the public, there's a series of things we used to rank the sites, and one of them is public interest. And it's not necessarily, it's staff's perceived public interest as well as comments, both in the past and during this process. So it's not that we got more comments on this issue and that's the sole thing that we use to rank this as the highest public interest. It's staff's perceived understanding of public interest in integrated sustainable water resource management. And you heard basically, it seems like a lot of the comments today had to do with things like groundwater recharge, drought. I mean, it's our understanding that the idea of more efficiently using our water resources and the importance that has on water quality and beneficial uses is important to the public at large.
Can I chime in there as well? To add to what Phil said, I want to connect some dots here. Earlier in the day, the board was dealing with the consent items and those permits and was emphasizing the need to consider climate change and recycling and to start incorporating those elements in everything that we do. And the board has been saying that for some time now. And this item that that we've made number one on this list or proposed as number one for the board is in large part due to the board's direction to consider recycling, climate change, and sustainable water resource management in our work. So trying to put those issues or address those issues in individual permits as they come up is an awkward thing to do from a regulatory perspective. A more comprehensive way to do that is to update the basin plan to reflect the board's expectations and principles and requirements and describe in the basin plan how we are going to achieve those expectations and principles. And we will achieve those, and if we pursue this, in using three primary routes. One is the board's direct authority, the board's indirect authority, and influence. As the chair has pointed out to us many times, we have authority, we have direct, indirect, and direct authority. We also can facilitate with our influence. And so we're with this item, we want to formalize the implementation for sustainable water resource management so that when permits come up before you, they will incorporate those things from the basin plan and do so formally. So that's where the genesis of that item and how it has morphed since last time is in large regard in response to the board's direction to staff.
It seems so broad that it's hard for me to wrap my head around it. And it's going to take up to three person years to do. So I just would feel, I would feel better if I was more comfortable with what it is. It just seems like it covers groundwater management, recycled water, climate change effects on all aspects of water management. It just seems so big that I don't understand what it's going to look like. Like, it can't be just a section in the basin plan, right? It has to be multiple sections.
It may be. It may include multiple sections of the basin plan. At this point, again, it's a concept. I mean, we would, if the board gives us direction to pursue this, we would work on the concept. We would create a more defined concept and bring it back to the board for consideration. So it would be a long process with many stages. At this point, you're right, it's broad, but it's just a concept. And through this process, would further define what that concept is and any boundaries around it.
And did staff consider, to get here today, having this be multiple issues, and when you tried to do that, like separate climate effects of climate change from groundwater resource management, did you start with multiple issues and say, we better just put these together and call it one and try to address it as one?
Can I comment?
Sure.
I think they're linked. You cannot talk about climate change ignoring surface water and groundwater, because you need surface water to get groundwater, and there's an interconnection between those. So there is an overarching theme, and I think you gotta, you know, this is a 30,000 foot elevation, and eventually we're gonna get to sea level, but we gotta start with a big picture, and maybe this is. Well, yeah. I'm saying that for the city of Marin, you know?
No, I think to me this is the one water, that there isn't stormwater, there isn't wastewater, that we have to deal with climate. I mean, we have to deal with these on holistic levels. This is the largest bucket or umbrella that we can put it in and then tease out the finer issues. But we really need to deal with them from a systems perspective. And so this is that systems perspective from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing more and more this districts looking at in those perspective, you know, ranging from stormwater capturing to, you know, recycled water, et cetera. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but, you know, I thought to share my view on this.
That's good.
So did you start out with multiple boxes and then decide to merge them?
I from my own personal perspective, I don't see it as multiple boxes. I see it as sustainable water resource management is a broad issue that includes many components.
As a staff person that was charged with figuring out and apply and starting to work on this issue, I had some of the same questions you did about this is a really broad, how do you get your head around it? And the way direction we were going, and we have made progress on it, the direction we were going was the thinking about it in terms of an overarching resolution or policy for our region that's more of like a statement of purpose, followed up by an assessment of what individual aspects of that larger policy are highest priority and need the most attention, and ranking those, and then pursuing individual projects under this larger concept of sustainable water resource management, or One Water. And so we developed a methodology where we were going through and able to identify what some of these high priority aspects of sustainable water resource management, what's most important under that umbrella, and then figuring out, okay, which of those should we tackle, and what can we do about it in a basin plan amendment, maybe to improve our regulatory authority to deal with that issue. And so we developed that methodology, we're ready to apply it. It needs some tweaks, though, because we've been getting input from management here, and I believe through the board, as to what this project should look like, dealing with climate change and other issues. But so we have made progress, and that was the kind of the vision for how it would work at the staff level, but we're going to take a step back and relook at it.
Okay, and my last comment in this vein is that even the titling is a little bit complicated for me, because you keep referring to sustainable water management, which itself is pretty broad, and the title of this is Watershed and Integrated Water Resource Protection, which is even more vague. And so I guess that's where I would think the public would have trouble with this issue too, knowing what the heck this means and what this is going to address. It's not self-explanatory by the title, yeah. And it's even tough to talk about it when we have time to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. That's a point well taken, and I would go back to where we started with this item, or in response to the comments, which is that all these are potential projects, and that when we pick them up, we're going to have a full public process, and that's where we will iron out the details and provide more clarity.
Okay, thank you for being patient.
So, I'm very comfortable with the process taken. Just, a couple of observations, and they tend to be more in the little check of how realistic, some of our goals are. And, we refer to the Central Coast Water Board vision, which was developed, several years ago. And we refer to...
10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah, one decade ago. So at that time, we... basically had a vision that clean groundwater, and I quote, by 2025, 80% of groundwater will be clean, and the remaining 20% will exhibit positive trends in key parameters. I suggest that's not a vision, that's wishful thinking, because, from a scientific standpoint, that's impossible. We cannot in the next 7 years achieve 80%. And I realize this was written, as Dr. Hunter mentioned, 10 years ago, but I would suggest down the road, if we do make references, we need to update our thinking a little bit. There's a good reason why at the time, 10 years ago, we said 80%, because 10 years ago, we did not know nearly as much as we know now about how the breadth and the depth of groundwater contamination. With all of the work that we have done on well sampling and the ag order, et cetera, the CCAM projects, et cetera, we have in the last 10 years discovered quite a bit of information, realizing, wow, this is a much bigger issue than what we saw. So, I'm not criticizing what we did 10 years ago, but as we go along here and we quote some of these older views, we need to perhaps have a little caveat saying, we recognize today, though, that the issue is much more significant. That way, we're realistic in our thinking And, you know, this remains a living document. So that would be one. The other one is when we're looking at the priorities, timetable, and we have, you know, person years assigned to those. We basically, to be realistic, we have a half a person year dedicated for this basin plan. And if I add up all the hours, it's going to take 40 years to achieve this. Actually, it's just about exactly 40 years. So, you know, when my colleague Mayor Delgado said, boy, this is broad. I mean, how long is it going to take? Yeah, you know, I get it, but maybe a way to look at it, and I'll use a different terminology that will be a little more appealing to you, is, you know, how you eat a 200-pound pumpkin is bite by bite. Yeah. So I think we so we need to, you know, I think we need to understand that this is a long, long-term, you know, effort. And just to address the, you know, your first priority item, I mean, this is going to require, you know, 6 years to do that. So I don't, you know, I had a request for clarification from our executive officer to, okay, what, you know, are we tied to the allocation of a half a person year, but then you get into the world of, you know, managing human resource, limited resources, et cetera. And it's not as, you know, our executive officer really has the flexibility of say, well, I'll take three people from this department because you take it from one end, you know, and another hand. So you do have a challenge of a pretty big task here and trying to accomplish it with the available resources.
Right, I want to acknowledge that I don't envision that we're going to stay at the 0.5 allocation, 0.5 personnel year allocation going forward. We have some opportunities with the hiring we discussed recently that might free up some capacity that we could reallocate in that direction. This is not a discussion we've had yet internally with respect to this priority list and time budget here. But I anticipate that we're going to bump our basin planning allocation. You know, otherwise, to your point, it takes 6 years to just, if that's an accurate budget, it'll take us 6 years at the current allocation, and that doesn't seem realistic.
And to accomplish all these tasks, you know, 40 years, I'll be looking at Steve's retirement party. You know? So yes, please. I just, you know, wanted to, I know I'm not adding a whole lot of value perhaps here in the conversation, but I think it's important that we maintain the reality check on what we're doing here.
Yeah, just the last few comments. I just want to zero in on something that you said, referring to this, the basin plan as a living document. And I think that, you know, the concept of the basin plan as a framework is probably the most realistic part of it. The fact that it's out of date in certain ways, and the fact that the state of California as a whole is moving in a direction that wasn't present when the basin plans were initially developed. And so it's an enormous challenge to have the basin plan actually provide the kind of support and structure that actually reflects the current work that we're doing. So I think, you know, the effort to recognize, in particular, the higher priority issues that need to be updated, that to me has real value. And certainly climate change is one of those areas that just, you know, it's going to take time, but it's become a more urgent priority. And I expect to see that the basin plan, in in any way we can, considering the limited resources in terms of personnel time. But I'm, you know, I think when I first came on the board and I began to understand what the basin plan, the meaning of the basin plan and the purpose and function of the basin plan, it's an imperfect document, and it always will be. It's very frustrating. But I think this process is really important, both for staff and for the public, to recognize what the landscape, you know, of water regulation and resource protection looks like from our perspective, and then having the public comment and input so that we also understand on a micro level down to neighborhoods, you know, where people see these issues impacting them, where we're not addressing their needs. So I'm just adding, it's not a lot of value to the conversation, but hopefully some perspective to help help us all kind of look at this with some context. Thank you.
So I had a quick question, again, to not add value, but I guess my clarification, I was wondering, let's just jump on the bandwagon.
Did I start something?
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess my clarification question is, this is not a linear process, though, necessarily, is it? I mean, some of these items might shift in priority as we move through it, so it might not take 40 years, and I hopefully won't be dead by then anyway, but certainly we have some opportunities to weave some of these into the process as they become apparent and as they become prioritized, and either move them up or deal with some of them concurrently, correct? So it's not just this additive linear process that we're never going to get to the end of it. So I hope I'm correct in the assumption that we do have the opportunity to weave some of these in as we move forward in our process, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Comment?
Yeah, I'm just going to come back to Mr. Johnson's truth in advertising moment that he started this discussion with.
Because it was sense of added value.
It was on my list of things to say, but he stole from my script.
Thank you, Mike.
This whole list will not be basin plan amendments. This is just an aggregation of ideas and concepts, et cetera. To Ms. Gray's point, other things will inevitably come along and displace some of these things too. And there may be opportunistic
instances.
Yes,
not
thank you. That's what I was trying to avoid. you could see right through it. The present too. And actually Steve has done that. And so has Peter Mertens. We found some opportunistic basin plan amendments. And played them in front of you in the last year and a half or so.
Chair, I think I have a value-added question. May I ask you?
Please do.
I may be overlooking it, not seeing it, but I don't see anything about the anti-degradation policy. Doesn't that have a place in the plan? And doesn't it need to be updated?
That's a statewide policy. This is looking at revisions to our basin plan. So if we were to do an action that came out of it, we'd have to take into account the anti-degradation policy.
Does our basin plan already refer to that policy and have some kind of an outdated update that we will update once the state updates?
The basin plan incorporates the state board's anti-deg policy currently. If the state board were to update that policy, we would revise our basin plan to incorporate it.
Okay, so in our basin plan, when it refers to our anti-deg policy and how that applies to things like general orders, there's nothing that needs to be updated that's already in effect that's not in the basin plan now?
There is an ongoing debate about the anti-deg policy at the state board level and whether it should be updated or not, and how it should be implemented in permits. So that's an ongoing debate, and the state board has been working on it for several years. I can't tell you if they actually will update the anti-deg policy or not, but that's something they've been working on.
So I know that some of our orders, like the ag waiver, between 2.0 and 3.0, there was more reference to anti-deg policy, right?
Yes. Yes, and in 4.0, we'll do a complete analysis of the anti-dig policy and suggest a application of that policy.
So then,
So maybe I can clarify, because this may make a little more sense now, what you're asking for. There are many state board plans and policies, and when they apply, we have to use them. So for permits, we look at the anti-degradation policy as one of them. One of the reasons there's been such a change between Ag Order 2.0 and 3.0 and now 4.0 was not that the policy itself changed, but that there was a court case that essentially changed how we apply the policy. And so now all of our permits have to take into account this kind of greater application of the policy and the greater analysis that's required.
So would it be inappropriate for our basin plan to mention that court case and mention what steps are being taken?
It is applicable regardless of whether it's in the basin plan or not, because it's a state policy, and we're required to comply with all state policies and plans.
So it's not unusual for a state policy to direct what we do and not be referenced in the basin plan?
Right. Things like the on-site wastewater treatment policy. There's a number of different plans and policies that the state board does that we don't have referenced in our basin plan.
Okay.
That one may actually be a bad, because we may have referenced
it. We do have that one.
That plan actually told us to change our basin plan. But we're required to apply them. It's kind of like the difference between the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. Even if the U.S. Constitution isn't referenced in our state constitution, we still have to follow it.
Okay. So if someone from the public wanted to get an idea of what all of our authorities and responsibilities are, they'd have to understand our basin plan, and they'd have to understand a lot of what the state policies are and put them together, because we don't put them together in our basin plan.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we do have Chapter 5 of the Basin Plan, which is plans and policies, where we attempt to incorporate all the statewide water quality control plans and all the state policies that are in effect. But that chapter is out of date, and that's actually one of the issues.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
And these policies are constantly in motion. There's half a dozen always being revised because there's that many policies.
So just the anti-deg seems like kind of a monster,
yeah,
and yet it's not on this list. So that's what I started out, why I started out down that track. Okay, thank you.
All right, so do we have any further question? So this is, staff is recommending adoption of this resolution. Do you have any further concluding comments, remarks?
No, this is just discussion.
Okay. So is this strictly discussion at this time? But I think we're supposed to give some direction.
There's a resolution.
Yeah, so we have to give it a, yeah, because, you know, to adopt, we have to vote.
It's a resolution to adopt the priorities as in the order that they're listed.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. Is
understanding that there may be opportunities.
I'll second Michael's motion.
I made the motion. Sure.
Okay. Any further comment? I see none. I will ask for roll call.
Dr. Wolf?
Yes.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Ms. Cervantes? Mr. Delgado?
Yes.
Ms. Gray?
Aye.
Mr. Johnston?
You betcha.
Yeah.
Here, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So, break, quick one, because we're on target.
Break for what? We're done for the day.
No, we're not done for the day.
What else do we have?
So we're going to come back, I think, and do the executive officer's report.
We want to add value to this meeting.
Right,
so
right. We got work to do.
I didn't know you were pulling that out of order.
Okay, so 15 minutes.